All right, welcome back everyone to the Deep Dive. We're diving into a really, really important Supreme Court case today.
Yeah, this one's big.
Johnson v. California.
Mm-hmm.
And this is from 2005. And, you know, for all of our law students out there, we wanted to be super clear right up front that, you know, we're talking about the case that deals with racial segregation in California prison.
In prison.
Which is at 545 U.S. 162.
Right.
We are not talking about Batson v. Kentucky.
Yes. Very important distinction.
Which deals with jury selection.
Correct.
So two very different legal worlds, but kind of similar names and some overlapping concepts.
Similar concepts. Right. Easy to get them confused. So
very important to be clear right up front. You know, what are we actually talking about here? And what makes Johnson v. California so fascinating and, you know, why we chose this case is this fundamental clash that it really lays bare, which is, you know, the state's obvious and undeniable need to maintain safety and order inside its prison walls versus this, you know, fundamental constitutional guarantee of equal protection under the 14th Amendment.
Right.
And it really forces us, you know, as legal scholars and lawyers and future lawyers to ask this really, really tough question.
Mm-hmm.
Can prisons legitimately use race as a reason to separate inmates?
Right.
Even if it's just for like a very short defined period of time.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what makes this case so important. And that's exactly what was at issue with California's policy of segregating new inmates for up to 60 days.
Yeah. So let's back up a little bit and lay out the specific facts of this case. Mm-hmm. So we've got Garrison Johnson, who's a black man who was incarcerated in the California Department of Corrections, CDC, starting all the way back in 1987.
Right.
So, you know, he spends a lot of time.
A significant amount of money.
In the system.
Yeah.
And during that time, he noticed this pattern. Every time he was transferred to a new facility, for those initial 60 days in the reception center, he was always housed with another black inmate in a double cell.
Right.
Imagine, you know, kind of that feeling of, you know, over and over again, every time you go to a new facility, same setup.
It's a, you know, you can understand how that would be something of note.
Yeah. And this wasn't like a secret thing.
Right, right.
You know, the CDC didn't have an official written rule.
Mm-hmm.
But it was this, you know, very well-established, unwritten procedure.
Yeah, like everyone knew this is how we do things.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And their logic, their justification, stemmed from a very real and very serious problem in the prison system, which is racial gang violence.
Right. I mean, you know, anyone who spent any time, you know, studying the prison system in America knows this is a serious issue.
Absolutely.
So the idea, their reasoning behind this was by initially separating inmates by race.
Mm-hmm.
When they arrive, it would help to kind of mitigate, you know, potential conflicts, maintain some degree of control during this, you know, kind of chaotic, tense intake period.
Right, that initial, like you're coming into a new environment, you don't know anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's rooted in kind of preventing immediate clashes, right?
Yeah.
But on the other side of that, you know, we've got Johnson arguing that this practice, this routine of racial segregation is a blatant violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment.
Of course.
Which, you know, guarantees that no state can deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws.
Right.
And it's important to note here, just quickly, that, you know, the typical housing arrangements in these facilities involved single cells, double cells, and even larger dormitories.
Yes.
So Johnson's argument, he's not necessarily objecting to being in a double cell, you know, in and of itself. He's objecting to the fact that the initial assignments into those double cells in the reception centers were so overwhelmingly determined by race during that first 60 days.
For that initial period.
Yeah. And so, you know, this really throws us right into the central legal puzzle.
The core of the case,
that the Supreme Court had to solve.
Exactly.
Which is, what standard of review should courts apply when they're looking at these race-based housing decisions made by the CDC?
Yeah, and there are two big ones, right?
Right.
Do we apply strict scrutiny? The toughest standard there is.
Yeah, it's the highest level of review.
And the highest, you really gotta prove your case.
Government really has to prove.
Yeah.
Compelling interests, narrowly tailored means,
right,
Or should the court be more deferential
to
the expertise of prison officials and go with the more lenient standard that was established in Turner v. Safley?
Right, which generally asks whether a regulation is reasonably related to a legitimate penological interest.
Yeah.
Much lower bar.
So, I mean, the difference between these two
huge.
Is huge.
Could totally change the outcome of the case.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court did not, you know, mince words on this. They're pretty clear on which standard applied.
They came down pretty firmly
on
the side of strict scrutiny.
Yeah, so in a 5-3 decision,
mm-hmm.
the court said unequivocally,
yes,
strict scrutiny must be applied to this CDC policy of racial segregation in prisons. And Justice O'Connor, writing for the majority, she emphasizes this bedrock legal principle, right? Mm. Which is that all government classifications that are based on race, no exceptions, must face this highest level of judicial review.
Mm-hmm.
And she makes it really clear, like, this principle, it doesn't stop at the prison gate.
Right. It applies everywhere.
Right.
Prisons aren't exempt from the Constitution.
So let's kind of really dig into the why here
behind
this majority opinion. I mean, Justice O'Connor really anchors her argument in something that we all learned in, you know, our first year of law school, right?
Absolutely.
She directly invokes Brown v. Board of Education.
One of the most important cases in American history.
Right. And she states very simply and powerfully, separate is not equal.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not just a passing reference.
No, it's central to her reasoning.
It is central to her reasoning. And it really underscores the court's deep, deep opposition.
Fundamental opposition.
To racial segregation in any form that is imposed by the government.
Mm.
Now, the CDC tried to make this argument that their policy wasn't really discriminatory.
Mm-hmm. Because it applied to everyone.
In this classic sense, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Black inmates were housed with black inmates, white with white, and so on. It's equal, right?
Right. So everyone's being treated the same. But Justice O'Connor, like, shuts this argument down immediately.
Right.
And makes it very clear that the Equal Protection Clause, it prohibits all state-sponsored
segregation.
Regardless of whether the impact is felt equally across those groups.
It doesn't matter. The fundamental heart
is still there.
Of segregation remains.
Yeah.
And then she lays out the strict scrutiny framework, which, as we said, is a really high bar to clear.
Right, it was high. The government, the burden's on them now to prove their case.
Right. And under strict scrutiny, you know, 100% burden of proof is with the government.
The CDC in this case.
Right, the CDC in this case.
Yeah.
And they have to demonstrate two key things.
Okay.
First, that their racial classification, the segregation policy.
Right.
It serves a compelling governmental interest.
Right.
Something really, really vital.
Yeah.
Not just any old interest. It has to be compelling.
It has to be super, super important.
Yeah.
And second, that the policy was narrowly tailored.
Right. This is key.
To achieve that interest.
Yeah.
And narrowly tailored.
You know, it's not just like we're going to throw a wide net here. We're going to be very specific. This policy is going to be the least restrictive means possible.
It can't be too broad. It can't sweep in people who aren't really the target.
Exactly.
You know, you have to consider less discriminatory alternatives.
You got to look at other options.
If you can.
Yeah. Like if the real concern is violence from specific individuals, well, a blanket racial policy might not be the best way to go.
Right. Right.
You know, we got to be more tailored than that.
Yeah. It's a pretty blunt instrument.
Exactly.
You know, if that's the goal. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the big questions that comes out of this is why?
Yeah.
Did the court decide not to give the CDC that usual deference?
Right. That we usually give to prison officials.
Right, that they often get under Turner, right?
Right.
So what's so different here?
Yeah. This is important, right?
Yeah.
The court drew a really bright line between, you know, just your average prison regulations that are just trying to keep things running smoothly and claims of racial discrimination.
Yeah.
Now, the court gets it. Prison officials need flexibility. They got to be able to keep these places safe and secure.
Right.
But racial discrimination, that's different.
Yeah.
That's a fundamental right. That's a core constitutional right.
Right.
And it needs the highest level of protection.
You can't.
Because if we start applying a lower standard like Turner to racial classifications, in prisons, Well, that could really undermine the whole idea of equal protection.
Right.
It could lead to all sorts of bad things.
It could perpetuate harmful stereotypes.
Exactly. And divisions.
So the court's saying, no, racial discrimination, that's different.
That is a separate category of thing. It deserves strict scrutiny.
Now, we also had some interesting concurring and dissenting opinions in this case.
Oh, yeah. This wasn't a unanimous decision by any means.
It really wasn't. And
lots of different perspectives.
It adds a lot of nuance to this conversation.
Yeah.
So let's start with Justice Ginsburg's concurring opinion.
Okay.
What was her take on all this?
So Justice Ginsburg, she agreed with the majority that strict scrutiny was the right test.
Right.
But she brought, you know, a little bit of a different perspective. She's saying, look, all race-based policies, they trigger strict scrutiny.
Right.
But how we apply that scrutiny, it might need to be a little flexible depending on the kind of policy we're talking about.
Okay.
So she made this distinction between policies that, you know, they burden or disadvantage people based on race and policies that are trying to fix past discrimination.
Right.
So, you know, affirmative action policies, things like that.
Okay. So like a remedy.
Exactly. They're trying to remedy a past wrong. Mm-hmm. And in Ginsburg's view, the CDC policy, yeah, it needs strict scrutiny.
Right.
But it's clearly in that first category.
Right. This is not a...
It's not trying to fix a past wrong.
Right. Yeah. This is...
This is burdening people based on race.
Right.
So, yeah, strict scrutiny, but, you know, we got to keep in mind what the policy is actually trying to do.
Right. The context matters.
The context matters. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, we also have the dissents.
Okay.
And we had one from Justice Stevens.
Right.
And then a joint dissent from Justice Thomas, joined by Justice Scalia.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with Justice Stevens's dissent.
Okay.
Where did he differ from the majority?
Well, Justice Stevens, he actually took things a step further than the majority.
Okay.
So he agreed that the policy was probably unconstitutional, but he said it failed even under the Turner test.
So even under that more lenient...
Even under the more lenient standard.
Standard, right.
Yeah, he just didn't think the CDC had made their case. Huh. He's saying, you know, you haven't given us enough evidence to justify this big, broad policy of racial segregation.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't shown us data.
Yeah, like where's the data that shows
exactly
this is necessary?
Yeah, where's the proof that this is actually preventing violence?
Right, right.
And he also criticized the CDC for not really looking into race-neutral alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like individual assessments of an inmate's risk of gang involvement.
Right. So instead of just this
blanket policy.
Yeah, this blanket assumption.
Yeah, let's actually look at the individual.
And then Justice Thomas's dissent.
Yeah, this one's interesting.
It takes a very different approach.
Very different.
And he very strongly advocates for using Turner.
Yeah. He thinks the court got it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks they should have deferred to the prison officials.
Right.
And he makes some good points. He talks about the importance of prison safety. Mm-hmm. The need for order in these facilities.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he points to the very real problem of race-based gangs in California prisons.
Right.
He says, look, these are dangerous places and the people running them,
yeah,
they need to be able to make tough decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And he also argues that the court hasn't historically applied strict scrutiny to prisons.
Right.
So, you know, why are we starting now?
Why are we changing things up?
Yeah.
Yeah. So zooming out a little bit.
Okay.
You know, what is the real significance of Johnson?
Yeah. What's the takeaway for our listener?
Yeah. What should they be walking away from this conversation really understanding?
Well, I think the big one is that this case really reaffirmed that strict scrutiny is the standard for all racial classifications by the government.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this wasn't a new idea,
right,
but applying it to prisons, that was new.
That was a big deal.
That was a big deal, and it sent a clear message. You know, even in prisons, racial classifications, they're suspect, and they need to be justified. Just because you're in prison, it doesn't mean your constitutional rights disappear.
Yeah, you don't lose all your rights at the prison gate.
Exactly right.
Or in this case, it really shifted
the
burden of proof.
Who has to prove their case?
Right. Before this decision.
Yeah.
You know, courts might have been more likely to just defer to prison officials.
Right. They'd say, oh, well, the prison says it's for safety, so it must be okay.
Yeah.
But after Johnson, no.
Yeah.
The prisons, they have to show why a race-based policy is necessary. They can't just say it's for security. They got to prove it.
And show that there's no less discriminatory way to achieve that.
And it's important to note, the Supreme Court didn't actually decide whether California's policy was constitutional or not.
Right. They didn't rule on that.
They sent it back down to the lower courts and said, okay, you guys figure it out.
Apply strict scrutiny. Figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, in this case really highlights, I think, this
tension,
fundamental tension
between rights and security.
Yeah, right. Between these fundamental rights and the practical reality
of running a prison,
of running complex institutions.
It's not easy.
Like a prison system.
No.
Right.
Absolutely.
And I think the majority opinion, you know, it really prioritizes.
It prioritizes the Constitution.
That constitutional principle that race is a suspect classification.
Mm-hmm.
And that any governmental use of race
needs to be justified.
Really, really justified.
Really good reason.
Yeah. And then, you know, in contrast, you have Justice Thomas's dissent.
Right.
Really emphasizing
the practical side.
That practical concern for safety and security.
Keep those prisons running.
You know, in these really challenging environments.
Right. He's saying trust the experts.
Trust the prison officials.
They know what they're doing.
Right. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And as we've discussed, you know, that burden of proof, it now rests with the government to justify any race-based policies.
Big shift.
It's a huge shift
in
the law.
Yeah.
And I think the court's reiteration of separate is not equal, you know, really serves as this
powerful reminder.
Yeah. Powerful reminder of this.
Of our history.
Long and difficult history of racial segregation.
Yeah.
And this enduring commitment.
To equal protection.
To equal protection under the law.
Yeah, even in prisons.
Even in prisons.
Absolutely.
And that's a really, really important point to make.
Yeah.
Which brings us to, you know, I think a really critical question for our listeners.
Yeah, especially our law students.
Especially those future lawyers.
Yeah, the future of the legal profession.
Because, you know, we have this inherently challenging environment.
Prisons are tough.
Of a correctional facility.
Yeah.
So should prisons have some unique leeway?
Yeah. Do we cut them some slack?
To use these kinds of race-based classifications.
Even if it's just for safety.
You know, if it's for safety and order.
Mm-hmm.
Or does Johnson v. California correctly prioritize that principle of equal protection?
Which is so important.
Even within a prison.
Yeah. Tough question.
So how would you, as, you know,
future lawyers,
future legal professionals, grapple with these competing interests?
Because they both matter.
They both matter.
Safety matters and rights matter.
That's a tough.
How do we balance them?
It's a tough question.
It is.
So we encourage all of you to think about this.
Yeah.
You know, explore related cases.
Read up on.
Read some legal scholarship.
Yeah.
You know, think about how
the interplay,
equal protection and prison law, you know, kind of intersect and
a fascinating area.
Yeah, it's really fascinating.
It is.
Area of the law.
Absolutely.
So thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody.
We'll see you next time.
See you later.